the second season of No More Silence, a podcast dedicated to bringing an end to youth violence in Toledo. This is a youth-led podcast bringing high school and university students together with community leaders and experts to learn about the complex causes of youth violence. Experts will discuss initiatives in the city, trauma-informed communities, opportunity networks, the courage required of nonviolence, and much more. The podcast will bring to light youth experiences that stay hidden to the general community. Adults and youth will also share poetry created as a part of Fearless Writers, celebrating the 10th year of youth-led activism and knowledge creation.
I'm Katie Henderson, an MSW student. We are hearing today from graduate students from the University of Toledo Social Work Program who are preparing to face social challenges in our community from an individual, agency, and community level. In today's episode, we will focus on meso and macro trauma-informed care environments. As we have learned from previous episodes of No More Silence, the causes of trauma and healing from trauma can be complex and multifaceted. The following students are mental health professionals in training who are committed to not just treating behavior symptoms, but to get to the root of mental health concerns. These students want to be the seeds in their community that support resilience and nurture agencies and community cultures of healing. Our guest today is Dr. Walters Powell, the Director of Social Work at the University of Findlay. Thank you so much for joining us.
Sure.
Can you introduce yourself and talk a little bit about why trauma-informed care is important to the social work profession?
Yes. My name is Dr. Robin Walters Powell. I have been a social worker for about 35 years at this point. I am from Findlay, Ohio, and I am currently the chair of the social work program there at the University of Findlay. And I also have brought with me today my student. He is a senior, Devin Davis, and he is also from Findlay, Ohio. And he is graduating from the University of Findlay and is going to be going to Bowling Green State University, getting his master's in social work. And he is also going to serve as my intern for the master's in social work program.
What inspired the social work program's involvement with your regional trauma-informed care collaborative and its initiatives?
Yes. So in the year 2017, we were having a series of conversations with the recently retired Precious Stubbe. She was the director of our Adamus board in Hancock County. Her dream was to start to better equip our community of providers to address the growing need for trauma-informed care. And from that conversation, two things evolved. We created an addictions minor certificate through the social work program at the University of Findlay. And the second thing was creating a trauma conference that we were hoping would be able to be offered every year. And so the vision included bringing together different community partners, including educators, practitioners, and community leaders. We wanted to deepen the understanding of trauma and healing and just having a better approach with people. It has now actually become a tradition that's had a very positive impact in the care that we provide or offer in our community. And we are excited to be able to do this every year. And for us as a social work program, it actually made sense because we are always looking for ways to collaborate with our community partners. And because we are a smaller program, we have the ability to do a lot of creative things, I think, that larger programs don't get to do. And so we were able to offer a space where we could grow together as a community, mentoring our students at that time, sharing resources, and continuing to build on knowledge and skills that help us to serve others with compassion and competence.
For our first student writing prompt, we asked, have you witnessed how trauma and stress impacts higher education? How have you seen individuals successfully intervene?
Hi, my name is Grace. I am a foundation student in the MSU program. My undergrad degree is in psychology, and I am currently interning at Glass City Behavioral Health. I have seen how trauma and stress can affect students in higher education in many ways. Academically, students may struggle to focus, complete assignments, or keep up with their work. Behaviorally, they may become withdrawn, miss classes, or seem unmotivated. Emotionally, students may feel anxious, overwhelmed, or depressed. Socially, they may isolate themselves or have difficulty connecting with others. I have also seen ways that people can successfully help. It is important to create a safe space where students feel comfortable sharing their feelings. Recognizing signs of emotional distress early can make a big difference. Building strong connections and relationships helps students feel supported. It is also helpful to connect students to resources like counseling services. Giving students chances to share their background and experiences can help them feel understood and less alone.
Hi, my name is T. As an MSW student, I have witnessed trauma and stress impact higher education outcomes through various means. In a wider picture, I've seen a considerable reduction of two classmates who had left the program due to various stressors and personal affairs. I have also personally experienced academic stress during my own period of reliving my trauma these past couple of weeks that have caused a mental squeeze type of feeling through this period. And social interaction during periods of stress, I have noticed as a cohort and with myself specifically, that some individuals can feel a sense of social alienation and loneliness with how personalized stress feels and is experienced. This can sometimes lead to a snowball of behavioral changes that come from a feeling of alienation and stress, such as an inability for emotional regulation, periods of depressive episodes, and sometimes anger outbursts. When all these outcomes of trauma and stress occur in higher education, you begin to feel a sense of disillusionment during these times spent in the program if nothing is done to foster resilience and support.
Hi, my name is Daviana, and I'm an MSW student here at the University of Toledo. I currently work in a correctional setting with high-risk youth. Through both my academic and professional experiences, I can honestly say that I've seen firsthand how trauma and stress can significantly impact individuals in higher education. For many students, this shows up in different ways, like struggling academically, changes in behavior, emotional exhaustion, or even withdrawing socially. Working closely with individuals who've experienced trauma can impact us as professionals, leading to vicarious trauma or secondhand exposure to those experiences. Sometimes we're so focused on helping others that we neglect our own well-being. I can admit I've experienced that for myself. There are times when I feel burned out or overwhelmed trying to balance graduate school, work, and personal responsibilities. As graduate students, we're held to a high standard, but it can be difficult to manage everything. Stress can affect academic performance, sleep, and even social life. I definitely had days where I feel like I'm just dragging myself to class. At the same time, I've also seen some meaningful ways people intervene and support each other. One of the biggest things has been creating space for open conversations, whether that's in the classroom or with peers, where people feel safe expressing how they're feeling. That sense of connection and being heard really matters. I've also had professors who are understandable and flexible, which helps reduce stress and makes it easier to stay engaged. While there are some strong supports in place, I do think that there's still room for more intentional intervention in higher education when it comes to addressing trauma and stress.
So tell me, how many years has the trauma conference been going on? And what are some of your favorite topics?
Yes. So our conference, this will be year six, and it's been quite a journey doing this type of project. First of all, it requires just so much effort, and we have a lot of hands on board, and it has definitely morphed each year into something different. When we first started planning the conference, I really had no experience in doing this, but if anyone knows me, I'm always looking for challenges and opportunities to expand my experience and also just share my love and passion for social work. And so We were hoping that we would have a lot of interest, and we certainly did. And so it really took off from just that initial conversation that I spoke of with the Adamus Board. We were able to obtain a grant from the Ohio Department of Mental Health Services. So each year that is continued. They support us with a grant, as well as we get local monies from our local Adamus Board to help with that. The planning process is huge, and the first conference happened in 2019, and I would definitely say that's my favorite. The title of that was Mindful Pathways to Recovery. And we really all sit as a group and brainstorm kind of what is the most pertinent issue in trauma impacting our community. And that's where the theme of that conference is born every year. And while they're always trauma, they always have a trauma background, we always look for kind of new and innovative ways to look at trauma. And so that first conference, I think it was my favorite because it really took so much effort. It was such a different experience to plan something of that size. We had multiple sessions. Our keynote speaker was Dr. Jamie Merrick, and we had over 200 attendees from across the state. And so each year it kind of evolves into something different. In 2020, our momentum was stopped thanks to COVID. So we ended up planning a conference, but then having to cancel that. In 2021, we planned a conference. And then again, I'm sure if you remember, the COVID outbreak happened again. And so we ended up moving that online. So that was an experience. And that focus of that conference was trauma of inequity. And that just looked at trauma in a very different way, not the traditional way that we think about trauma. We have done things like nurturing resilience as a topic. In 2024, our title of our conference was Raising Up Resiliency. We were able to celebrate and highlight 30 years of success with our community partner, the Children's Mentoring Connection, that year with the director, Stacey Shaw. And so, again, that just speaks to our desire to involve our community partners, celebrate them, help to educate all the different people that are working with our community, educators, professionals, parents. We try to address just different things that are needed, that we feel that there is a gap. And so we try to provide that for those that are attending. Our current conference in 2026 is going to be September 18th. We're looking forward to that. We're in the process of planning that. We've decided to start offering an evening session or more of a relaxed conversation, casual conversation with a different focus for parents or different, maybe non-professional, but people that are still involved in providing trauma-informed care.
For student rating prompt number 2, we ask these questions. What can be built to foster resilience as a program when chronic stress, loss, and systemic barriers are a reality? What does self-efficacy mean to you? What supports this at a program level?
Hi, my name is Angela, and I'm an MSW student here at the University of Toledo. I currently work in early intervention with families who have children birth to 3. I believe a way that we can foster resilience as a program is through community. I believe that there is so much power in community and having a sense of belonging. For example, when we meet as a group, we are able to share experiences and offer support and advice to each other. This opportunity for peer support allows us to build resiliency and self-efficacy, because there is a space for us to brainstorm new ideas and see new perspectives from our classmates. This will help build confidence with the work that we do and allow us to not feel so alone. I think an opportunity for us to support at the program level could be to offer a space in class for us to connect. Many times this is already happening with some time before and after class, but it would be nice if there was a designated time just for us to collaborate.
Hi, my name is Maddie, and I am an MSW student here at the University of Toledo, and I'm currently interning at Harbor Behavioral Health. I believe one of the most important ways a program can foster resilience is by creating an environment where students feel safe, supported, and free of judgment. When I feel comfortable being myself and know that I am understood, it becomes much easier to stay engaged and continue pushing forward. I also think having a sense of choice and autonomy is essential. Even small decisions can create a sense of stability and empowerment, which helps build confidence over time. In addition, developing trust and maintaining open, supportive relationships with both faculty and classmates plays a significant role in fostering resilience. To me, self-efficacy is the confidence in my ability to face challenges, problem solve, and keep moving forward. It's about trusting myself to work through difficulties and grow from those experiences. At a program level, self-efficacy can be supported through strong peer support and effective leadership, as these help build meaningful connections and provide encouragement.
Hi, my name is Libby, and I think that, similar to what has already been said, community and support for one another provides individuals with so much resiliency. The ability to confide in one another and speak to people who are going through similar experiences as you is incredibly beneficial. Another thing that I have noticed is how open and supportive the staff and professors are. There have been multiple instances where teachers have taken the time to allow us to choose when assignments will be due, change the due dates of projects, and ask for our opinions regarding work. This opportunity for choice and autonomy also really helps with stress and feelings of helplessness by offering us a sense of control. I also think that learning skills like problem solving, emotional regulation, and distress tolerance while in school is incredibly beneficial, because this is also a high burnout rate within the field of social work itself. Because of this, these skills aren't just helpful in getting through schooling, but also in our future careers within this field.
So, in what ways are students involved with the collaborative in the conference? Mm-hmm.
So, as I said, our program is small, and we love that because our students really have helped with the planning process. Initially, that first conference, they all were involved in that. I made it a class project. But each year, our students volunteer, and I've had the opportunity to utilize master's-level interns, such as Devin. And I'm going to let Devin just speak a little bit about what his responsibility is with the trauma conference planning this year.
Thank you, Robin. Some of the responsibilities that I have currently with planning the trauma conference involves taking notes when we go to the meetings, looking into possible speakers that would relate very well with the topic. This topic of the year, we are talking about suicide postvention, helping people kind of grasp an understanding of like how we feel after suicide, how to develop certain skills to cope with that, not only for the loved ones of those who had completed suicide, but also for the providers who have had clients and people that they have tried to help and process some of those feelings, such as what could I have done? Did I do something wrong? How can I make sure that this doesn't happen to somebody else? And I've been in the process of meeting with speakers and trying to find the best ways to try and like get the best stuff for the conference.
And I love it because it's such an amazing thing to be able to add to your resume, isn't it? That you've worked on creating a conference for people that is beneficial. And so our students are involved. They volunteer. We have interns that help, and they themselves are doing field placements, and so they're bringing in their own experiences as students and also as personal experiences, which allows that to be even more meaningful.
For the third prompt, we asked, what will it take to shift understanding about trauma?
Hi, it's Grace again. To shift understanding, it is more important to start by asking what happened to you instead of what is wrong with you. This helps us see people with more empathy and understand their experiences instead of judging them. We also need to focus on compassion, which means finding meaning and positive feelings in helping others. This can help reduce burnout and fatigue. Another important idea is resilience. This means that by hearing others' stories of strength and survival, helpers can also feel inspired and grow stronger themselves. We should recognize post-traumatic growth. This means that even after trauma, people can heal, grow, and become stronger in different ways. overall, shifting understanding takes empathy, awareness, and focusing on both challenges and strengths.
Hi, my name is Katie, and I'm an MSW student at the University of Toledo. I believe shifting the understanding means that we must change how we frame people's experiences. So instead of asking what's wrong with you, we could instead ask what happened to you. This is something that our professors have taught each one of us in one of our courses. This also helps us to see behavior through a trauma-informed lens, which is also a big part of mental health in today's world. I also think that not just focusing on burnout, but we must recognize compassion satisfaction and what that means and how we can be fulfilled in our everyday jobs. We think about trauma, we don't just focus on harm. We also consider resilience and post-traumatic growth and must recognize strength and healing. It's really all about seeing people as resilient and shaped by their experiences, not defined by their struggles.
Hi, it's T again. In my experience, both as a student and in field experience, I have found that vicarious trauma and real stressors can lead to things like burnout, cynicism, and growing apathy. That is something that could be mediated through fostering resilience as a program. This is able to occur when there is a solid community of peer and supervisor support to help ease challenges and provide social support in these cases. This support can happen through various mediums, providing spaces for relaxation by the social work department, department-specific programs for social support, flexible understanding in how deadlines are met on an academic basis, being willing to seek out feedback, and a network hub that helps manage professional, academic, and personal development. All these goals might seem lofty, but with collaboration, there can be a wider network of support that can foster resilience through various means and needs for students.
So, how have these connections with the community changed or influenced the social work program?
Yes, the trauma conference has been really such an amazing, I would say an amazing portal for us to explore really what's going on in our community and how we can respond. And I think that is really, as a social work professor, you can't ask for anything more real as an experience. And it allows us the opportunity to explore and provide the resources, which is what social work, you know, that's our initiative, is to provide the resources for people. And it really has helped us to be responsive to our community partners. We use them for, you know, field placement opportunities for our students and, you know, just for the collegiality of our community. We really appreciate the opportunity to provide something that they need. We are a CEU provider for the state of Ohio. The University of Findlay is through the social work department. And it's another opportunity for our community professionals to come in and get their CEUs, which, because I've been at Findlay for 26 years, I have a lot of students, a lot of past students that are still in the area practicing. And it's amazing to get to have that little reunion every year. They come back to the university for this conference, and I get to see them and, you know, see how they're doing. And that's also rewarding. And so we're able to really full circle serve people in a way that also models for our students what they're going to be doing in the future.
In prompt number 4, we asked, what is an organization's responsibility to healing from trauma?
Hi again, it's Daviana. When it comes to an organization's responsibility in healing from trauma, I think they play a major role. Organizations should be supportive of both their staff and the communities they serve, especially during such vulnerable times. It really starts at the top with leadership and administration, creating a culture that is supportive and compassionate. That includes putting policies in place that prioritize well-being and making trauma-informed care part of the organization's mission. From there, it should carry throughout all levels from administration to supervisors and lastly to staff, because everyone is impacted in some way, shape, or form. I also think reflective supervision is really important. Having a space where staff can process experiences and emotions, talk through challenges, and feel supported can make a big difference in preventing burnout and vicarious trauma. Again, the policies in place will ensure that this is happening. Along with that, peer support is key. I mean, by just knowing that you're not alone and having coworkers or supervisors who understand what you're going through can be very powerful. I think organizations have a responsibility to create an environment where healing is possible, not just for clients, but for the people doing the work as well.
Hi, it's Angela again. I feel an organization's responsibility to healing from trauma starts with its leadership. If a leader is supportive and compassionate, they will hopefully create policies and programs that are also supportive and compassionate. At the organization where I work, my supervisor understands how challenging working with children and families can be. So she was able to put in place a space where we meet with as a group with a LSW professional to share challenging cases that we are struggling with, and it is called reflective supervision. The leader of this group guides us through what feelings are surfacing for us when we are working with families. She will also share advice and perspective. As a group, we talk about what we heard, and we get a chance to reflect. This also allows us as service providers to consider new ways to see a family and how we may approach the situation differently. This also helps us recognize how our own personal traumas may show up in the work that we do, and in this reflective space, it gives us an opportunity to process that. This is just one idea of how an organization can help support healing.
Hi, it's Maddie again. I believe organizations have a strong responsibility to support healing from trauma by intentionally building and maintaining peer support. Healing often happens through connection, so creating opportunities for individuals to feel understood, validated, and supported is essential. Peer support allows individuals to connect with others who have faced similar challenges, helping to normalize their feelings and reduce isolation. It also fosters a sense of belonging, which can be incredibly powerful in the healing process. Within an organization, this can look like team check-ins, peer mentoring, or support groups. These spaces help build trust among peers and make it easier for individuals to seek support when needed. In addition, peer support builds confidence and reinforces coping skills in a collaborative and encouraging way. I believe organizations must take responsibility for creating and sustaining peer support as a fundamental part of trauma healing.
So, what would a trauma-informed social work education culture look like from your perspective?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, we talk a lot about trauma. Trauma is kind of the focus in a lot of different areas. And there's definitely credibility in honoring individual trauma and understanding what that is. We also have to remember the macro impact of trauma and not just looking at, you know, what's happened to this individual, but historically, how has a group of people been traumatized and how is that still impacting them today? And so we have to look at it from all levels. And if we can train, inform, educate different people in our community, whether it's the teachers, the first responders, the court system, all of the systems that impact the people that we're going to be serving, I think that would make such a more effective way for people to heal and find the ability to be resilient. And instead of judging people or making those quick decisions, I think if we were all trauma informed and we had that approach, it would just be such a nicer way to handle things that are happening.
That's a really good point there. One of the things that I picked up on as a social work student is the person and environment perspective that we have in social work, which basically emphasizes that each person has a different background, a different family, a different place they grew up in. And I think one of the biggest enemies for trauma-informed care is this notion of common sense, thinking that every single person has this idea of what they should do and what they should not do, what's normal, what's not normal, what's right, what's wrong. And I feel like in that process, I had known different people who have had different experiences who have been motivated to feel certain things. I have a coworker who is afraid to get on the highway because she had an accident once. Knowing that and being able to talk to her about it in a way is trauma-informed care. I had a friend who was attacked by a dog at a very young age, so now when he sees animals, he gets very anxious. Knowing that is trauma-informed care. So when we go to somebody, using trauma-informed care is like setting aside this, well, why don't you just do this or why don't you just do that? And knowing that what we're saying and how we're carrying ourselves could very well have a different impact on each person because we don't know what they went through.
Mm-hmm. It honors just the legacy of social work, whole person, right? Looking at all the things that impact that individual. And so if we can take that into consideration, people will become more resilient, and it's just a healthier way and a more impactful approach to be trauma informed.
Holding safe spaces for people.
Mm-hmm. In writing prompt number 5, we asked, in what ways can the community support healing from trauma?
Hello, it's Libby again, and I think there are many ways the community can support healing from trauma. One of the first ways is becoming trauma-informed and learning how trauma can impact individuals. This knowledge allows communities to be more aware of what people may need when coping with trauma. It is also important for individuals who have experienced trauma to feel a sense of control and autonomy in their lives. So providing choice whenever possible can be incredibly helpful. Creating supportive environments where people feel safe and respected is also a big part of the healing process. However, one of the most important aspects, and something that has been a recurring point, is the role of support groups and community gatherings. These spaces allow individuals to build personal connections and feel less alone in their experiences. The pandemic especially highlighted how difficult and damaging isolation can be and reinforced how important it is to have a sense of community and belonging when healing from trauma.
Hi, this is Katie again. I think community support from healing from trauma is creating spaces where people feel safe, connected, and valued is important. It starts with a supportive environment that is consistent, predictable, and trauma-informed. It also means building strong personal connections because healing doesn't happen in isolation. Communities can create opportunities for growth through access to resources, education, and empowerment. It can also make space for people to gather, share, and feel a sense of belonging. But sometimes communities need to be prepared for a crisis, and having a system in place that not only responds effectively, but also supports recovering afterwards. It's also creating a community that promotes safety, connection, and resilience. We would like to thank WGTE and the producer of Voices Around Us, Chris Pfeiffer, for the opportunity to share our stories. Thank you to the students from the University of Toledo Social Work Program and Dr. Walters Powell. This is our final episode of Season 2 of No More Silence. Thank you so much for listening.
WGTE. Voices Around Us.